Welcome to Ever Beyond,
Beyond, Beyond, Beyond, Beyond, Beyond, Beyond, Beyond,
on Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sour in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond,
beyond.
Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and welcome to Ever Beyond this evening. It's, 11 p.m. UK time and 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and God knows what somewhere else. Can somebody put in what New Zealand and Australia time is? Because I know I've been looking at the charts. We got some fantastic listener spread. If I have a quick look at the listener report on the statistics page, just say. Sometimes it goes to a point when it actually can't count them anymore. It's just this enormous list. But it's great, and let's have a look down there. We're down to one person in New Zealand, so that's probably Stone Hobbit. So, but there's a lovely multitude out there in the Europe area, all the way down to Saudi Arabia. I don't know where that is. That's a long way, and then all the way out in the edge of Portugal. Sweden, hello, two in Sweden. That's brilliant. So, welcome everybody. And then, you know, huge spread across. Our northernmost listener is somewhere in Canada, that is, it's just kind of great in that big Hudson Bay thing. It's just right up there. Just says Canada. Mozilla. Anyway, so welcome to everybody. No matter how warm or how cold it is, whether it's midwinter or midsummer, it's the full moon. It's going to be the full moon on a moon day on the equinox. And, gawblimey, if we're not going to have cloudy weather and we'll not see these lovely solar lineups. Now, whenever I went down to the Stonehenge, midsummer's thing, it was always the most dreary gray day. I have never seen the famous sunrise on the Heelstone thing come up. It's always just been a miserable day. Whenever any solar alignments ever happen, it's always a miserable grey day, because I live in Britain, okay? And in Britain, we have the worst weather at the worst possible moment. But everybody else is getting their share of bad weather this year, so it makes me feel kind of warm-hearted. Anyway, co-piloting in this inner spacecraft tonight, I have Nancy Hopkins, who needs no introduction since she introduced herself in the last 2 hours. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Jay.
You're back. So I'll turn off my speaker now. There's been the theme this evening of pyramids, and so you've got your input as well as to what the pyramids are about. So do you want to sort of give us a précis of how you've put it together this evening?
You mean what I said earlier?
Yeah, and...
About the way that the pyramid... Well, the pyramid has got so many different
Well, exactly. So let's go into some of the purposes. I mean, you heard what I was saying about being turned into water and the plasma and the whole thing and stuff, the teleportation bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the whole mythical concept of the Egyptian pharaohs going through, into the next world. And that certainly answers that question, if that's how they were doing it. And what Jay was saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that in a pyramid, the natural situation in a pyramid is that things dehydrate, and that in the Great Pyramid, it was structured so that the dehydration of a pharaoh was actually the water being condensed into a plasma, then somehow or another gets shot out through one of what they called the air vents, but nobody really thought that's what they were, up to Sirius or Orion. Is that correct?
Yeah. Now, here's my thing. Those so-called air vents, in my humble opinion, are cable runs, not air vents. And the lead from the Great Chamber, which is where the energy was, you know, you got to think about it. If it was a kind of huge Wardenclyffe type thing, there must have been some kind of wiring. There must have been some sort of coiling. Now, obviously... Hey,
just tell them what Wardenclyffe is, because a lot of people...
Sorry. Wardenclyffe Tower was an invention by Nikola Tesla. So when you look at pictures of Nikola Tesla, sometimes there's a picture of him standing in front of this kind of enormous tower with a big kind of sphere on the top. And Simon was talking about this and that, and they said there's a great big spherical stone at the top, which is called the Ben Stone, and I was thinking, okay, so in the old days, if you wanted to make something, if you wanted to raise something up in the air, the only way you're going to do it is by imitating a pile of rocks. That's the most stable form. So a pyramid, that's the form. And so we've got a electrostatically attractive, you know, it'll be made of an electret. Like a magnet, there's an electret. And it's usually materials, and so whatever material, can you remember what material that thing was made of?
What thing was made of?
The stone that Simon said was at the top of the pyramid. The Ben stone.
I don't think he said what it was.
All right, if anyone in the chat room knows what material the Ben stone was, I would definitely say, I would venture a guess is that it would have electret properties. It would hold charge. So essentially, right, what?
Well, let me just interject here.
Go on.
Because he got me confused because he was talking about now the sarcophagus. Why am I not pronouncing this right?
Sarcophagus.
Sarcophagus. In the King's Chamber. Was he referring to that as being obsidian?
Again. He corrected himself. It's granite, not obsidian.
That's what I thought. But then he started talking about the Ben stone, and he said something about, you know, the obsidian, and then he corrected himself, and he said the black thing, whatever. So maybe it was shungite.
I think it was shungite. Because it's the only thing that is a conductor. It's the same. All right, so we're talking about Tesla. When you talk about Tesla, he's standing in front of a tower. And the tower is basically a kind of modern pylon-type construction with a great big ball at the top, a great big sphere. And I'm thinking, Ben Stone sphere held up in the air.
Which he said. Now, Tesla said that he would be able to communicate, send electricity, and also that it was a death ray. And that's exactly what
they said about the pyramids.
Exactly.
So, we've now... Right, so basically the pyramid is not, it just happens to be that shape because that's the most stable shape. If you drop a pile of sand, that's the angle you get. In fact, that is exactly the angle that you get in silicon dioxide, which is sand, which is quartz, which is the angle of the face of the quartz crystal. Relative to the body of the quartz crystal is 51 degrees, 51 minutes, exactly the same as the pyramid. And so it's the silicon connection there. Anyhow, the whole thing is to get a huge conductor up in the air. Right. And as we know, shungite is an attractive material. And so it will attract electrons out of the air because up in the air, there's loads of charge. I mean, the whole place is highly charged and it's just loads of bits of charge looking for somewhere to go. And so if you have a big sphere of a conducting substance, especially if it's grounded, especially if it's got a path to ground that doesn't have to travel through that really dense, thick layer that we like to live in, then you get a potential. Now, when you have a potential and you've got a wire, then you've got a circuit. Now, beneath that is a crystal device that is set in vibration. And it's like there are several energy sources here that they bring together, and they work one off against the other to create a kind of pump. And one part of the pump pumps up water from the river, mostly, if it needs to. There's a kind of big stone gate at the bottom that can that works the pump. And they can draw water into this thing. And I believe it's for placing, it's for weather control in one level, is that it uses all the energy that it generates from being up in the air. Okay, so the Warden Cliff Tower, because, right, if you stick a, it's a simple thing. If you stick a big piece of wire up in the air, and I was looking at this last night, actually, looking at these guys doing this, and they basically have this huge, like, 300-foot tower. They got four of them, and they got wire strung between them, like a great big square. And they can generate, like, hundreds of thousands of volts at quite a big capacitor current. And they, you know, they transform it down to a useful current. And they're looking for funding to get a bigger thing. But basically, if you stick a wire in the air and you stick a wire in the ground, you can run stuff off it. No kidding. That's all it needs. So basically, if you tune in, and what Warden Cliff did was to actually tune, instead of having loads and loads of scattered frequencies and all sorts of things, it would bring them all into one accord, and it would emanate a very pleasant feeling. That vibration was also something you could stick a smaller aerial up in the air, and you could then, use the energy that came from the potential between that and the ground. It's like a step down. Does that make sense?
Well, Warden Cliff was 300 feet tall, which is 30 stories.
Yeah.
The pyramid is what, 44 stories? 42 stories?
I don't know what stories translates to.
Well, it's 10 feet. 10 feet is a story.
All right.
Because most people can see, I mean, if I'm thinking in terms of feet, I always have to convert it to visually into a story. If I'm looking, if I'm looking at a condominium, how high up am I looking?
Mm.
And 30 stories is a hell of a long way up, and 40 even more than that. Mm. So when Jay's talking about being up in the air, he's talking about being up in the air.
Yeah. Look, some of the reasons that they build tower blocks is to access portals that are up in the air. You know that one?
Well, nothing surprises.
There was a Doctor Who about it, actually. And you know, it's all in Doctor Who. Walt will love that little reference, but yeah.
Well, the other thing is the shungite, okay? Now,
why would there be a great big shungite sphere up in the air, yeah?
Yeah, because it conducts electricity. But most people, when you say that, they're not really sure what we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
So, if you put electricity in one end of it, it comes out the other. It allows electricity to flow through it, where any other mineral doesn't do that.
Yeah, so it's a mineral conductor, which is unusual, because most of the time, you know, it literally...
A mineral versus metal.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
It behaves like a metal. Electrically, it behaves like a metal. I take my test meter. I freak people out. I give them a piece of shungite. I say, do you think that'll conduct electricity if I put a meter across it? And they say, nah, it's a piece of stone. And they totally get shocked when I put my probes across it, and boom, the needle goes right across, saying there is like 3 ohms resistance here.
We have a customer who came, and I said to him, this looks so obvious, I can't believe it took this long for anybody to see this. What we do now to show people, okay, is we take a flashlight, and I like to put it in the on position so they can see the beam of the light, right? And then I untwist the back of it, so I disconnect the continuity of the system, right?
Oh, I see. And then you put a chunk
You put a chunk of shungite so that it touches the middle part of the battery and then touches the side of the flashlight, and the light will turn on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and we've tested it with stuff that was supposed to be shungite and proved it wasn't without taking out the meter. All you have to do is show that it can act as a conductor. Exactly. So that's why we're saying that of all the stuff that might be black, and maybe we're misunderstanding what Simon was saying, but it could be black and have conductivity of a great, I mean, it's a pretty good, you know, ability to conduct electricity.
Yeah.
And plus it's got, you know, the fullerene in it, which locks into the quantum field. The key to the magic of the shungite is the fullerene. And the fullerene is, now we're talking about a carbon-60 fullerene. There's different versions of a fullerene, but the carbon-60 creates the soccer ball look. And when you've got that sacred geometry mixed with that particular geometry, like a soccer ball, think of it, you got all the lines are equal, all the angles are equal, and so what you've developed is like a bunch of zero points, null points, they call them. And the Genesis crystal, which is a crystal that is a geometric form that has only one null point in it, is magical in and of itself. Buckminster Fuller and many, many other people have done a lot of analysis in the Genesis crystal. Well, the fullerene is like the Genesis crystal on steroids. You got 60 of them. So you've got this conductivity of electromagnetic energy plus the quantum coming into it. Yes, you could very easily control this from going from a trickle of energy that might be able to supply lights all over the world to something that could knock out a black knight satellite system. What do you think? You there?
I'm there, but I'm chewing some nuts over them.
Oh, okay. There's got to be some kind of a flag we can do when people, you know.
Yeah,
People don't understand that, like, on today, you're up for, what, 10 hours or something or more?
Yeah, and I start at 7 p.m. UK, and I end up basically finishing at 7 a.m. And also, on Friday, I was, like, 7 p.m. to 7... No, about 9 a.m. Saturday, you know, doing the video and doing the webinar and things. So, you know, these are long days to do all this stuff. And so I do need to, refresh and snack out for a bit. Somebody gave me a coffee machine that, you know, like the classic kind of coffee pot that keeps the coffee warm, and it tastes terrible. How can people do this? Do you do this?
Does it have the heat keeping on?
It's got an element underneath it. That's
no. What you need is a thermos, a really good thermos. You put make the coffee, put it in the thermos, and the thermos doesn't keep heating; it just keeps it hot. And I've had thermoses, especially the next morning you would burn your mouth.
Is that thermi?
Huh? No, I don't think so. But thermoses, you know, I mean, really good thermos.
All right, that's a thought. Yeah. I have a couple of friends, I say, do you like some tea? No, they bring their own, you know, they've got their own little brew in their thermi. So meanwhile, can you hear the cat?
No, actually, I've not heard the cat. You said, oh, there she is. I did hear it.
Yeah, I'll just turn it up a bit. So I hear this occasional mewing, because like what happens is, you know, I go out of the room, I go to sleep, or I go out for a little bicycle ride or something. And I come back, and wherever she was last time, she's somewhere else. She's like disappeared. So I have no idea where this mewing is coming from. I've got my headphones on, so I can't really. It's quite loud today.
Where are you, puss?
But she does this. She's got enough food. She's got litter, and you know.
Is she trapped? Is she someplace?
No, not at all. No, she's. She's got this routine thing. It's her trauma playing out. So I just let her do this and give her whatever support she needs. But she's freaking out a little bit and this is her trauma playing out. But she'll be all right.
Have you given her any shungite water?
There's a thought. I should give her some of mine in a minute. Yeah.
You want some shungite, darling?
Yeah, You can never say. It's a funny little sound. It's halfway between yes and no, so you can interpret, you know, you can just imagine that she's saying yes or no.
If you've got shungite, put it down where she might get, because when my cat is, I actually know when my cat's not feeling good, because he'll go and he'll lay in the shungite pile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do get attracted to it. And it's also, you know, it just makes them feel more comfortable. And, you know, to be honest with you, the amount of electronics you have in your place, you're probably blasting this poor little thing with Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Well, I've got loads of shungite thingies lying around. I'll try some shungite water in a minute and some shungite. I got some tumblestones. Oh, tumblestones. Shungite tumblestones are really lovely.
Yeah, they
really
can be.
Really nice.
Well, yeah. I think the ones that are most energetic are ones that are just raw, you know, right out of the ground.
Yeah.
That's true for most minerals. The only mineral that I know that actually became more energetic after faceting, after somebody worked with it, is garnet. The rest of them, they lose something when they're faceted. When they're, you know, cut in any way, worked with.
Mm. You know, it's interesting because, when Walt said, yes, they have a flow and a current and a black and a, you know, a plus and a minus side. And I started, checking them out. And what's amazing is that the people who cut these things, they, you know, I've got a few shungite, pendants and stuff like that. And sometimes they're like a flat, you know, a disc. And when they polish them and hang them, I check, you know, whether the flow's going from back to front or front to back. And they're set up right. They're just set up right. You know, they either are conscious of it or they unconsciously do it, but the flow goes outwards. You know, it draws energy outwards.
We were figuring it out, and I've actually put out into the marketplace and hopefully still hanging on people's necks, over 2,000 pendants. So I've made over 2,000 pendants, and I can tell you that if I don't have that pendant in the right polarity, I get nauseous. So if they're working with this stuff all the time, it's conceivable that even though they don't realize it, they're going to go to what makes them feel better. They may not even realize they're getting nauseous. I had a young girl, she was 8 years old, and I said, there's an up and a down to these, and they were just, you know, regular nuggets, and I said, there's an up and a down to these, can you tell me what was what? And she was 100% correct. You know, she just knew. So that doesn't surprise me, because when you work with this stuff for any amount of time, you begin to get to just work with it. Because there are colors that shungite will bite you when you're trying to wrap it. It doesn't want that color, one nugget. And it sounds preposterous, but everybody that's worked with it has the same, you know, it's like, no, I don't want that silver, I want gold. And you can fight with it and then go with a silver wire and it will, you know, almost wrap itself. You know, we had, I don't know if you heard the program on Tuesday, but...
The last half of it, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, when we're working with something like shungite, or any of the crystals, because they all have their own magical energies, it really takes energy-sensitive people to get them, to understand, to be able to take what they're feeling and to put it into some kind of words. And when you are, when we first started out, I would just get energy sensitive people and we would put them through some testing with, you know, does this feel right? And now we're going to put some shungite. Now how much shungite do we have to put? You know, what kind of form? Is it powder? Is it, you know, we went through a whole thing, but our measurement devices were human beings. Well, I feel kind of like, nah, why didn't I think of this before? But I didn't realize that thermography, you know, the looking in the human body to see any hot spots. You know that technology, Jay? It's they use it like a mammogram will show a tumor developing, but even before the tumor develops, there is an energy signature that causes heat because the cells are diseased, they're out of balance, and they're causing excess energy. So even before you see a tumor, you can see it in the thermography picture. And that's just seeing where hot spots are in the body. And I was telling this story to my chiropractor, and he says, we use that in order to see damage in ligaments and stuff, because it also will register as hot. Now, in the photographs, and a lot of you people out there have probably already seen it, that you've got a picture of the human brain after it's been listening to a telephone, a cell phone. And you'll see this bright red. You know, there's a number of these pictures out there, and they've been around for a while. Well, what happened was that one of our people that works with us with a shungite was having this woman who, you know, if you go to the, I don't even know about the insurance companies, but they'll pay for a mammogram, but I don't think they pay for this thermography. And yet the thermography is going to see things and not give you a false reading that the mammograms don't do. But that's all, you know, the money thing and all that. So she would get this woman to come to her house once a year, and instead of going and getting a mammogram, she would have her check, you know, thermography. So she comes over this time, and she they do the following experiment. They took Serenata, and she hadn't been on the phone, and they took all of the shungite stickers off her phone. They took all the shungite that she was wearing, bracelets, necklace, everything. She's got no shungite on her. And they had taken a base picture of her brain and her hand before she touched the cell phone. Then she made a phone call, and I don't know how long that phone call was, but knowing them, it was certainly not 5 minutes, because they would have been, you know, oh, let's get this picture. We want to see what's happening. But I don't know for sure how long it was. But when they took the picture, from her ear all the way halfway through her brain was bright red, which means that the microwave signal, this low-level microwave signal that does nothing to you, had in fact increased the temperature inside the brain so that it was now registering on a thermography visual. Now, that was stunning enough, but I had seen this kind of picture before. But what freaked me out was the hand. Her hand was bright red, and it should have been blue-green. Bright red, the whole thing, from her wrist to the tip of her fingers. So then they were going to put the shungite stickers on the cell phone, and then they also had her put on the pendant. But it took 20 minutes, before they could get the same base picture. So it took 20 minutes for her brain to cool down enough to where it had been before she picked up that cell phone. 20 minutes. And how many times do you pick up a phone in 20 minutes? And
you get people talking all day on these things.
So they're cooking their brain continually. Now, the picture that they took with the shungite stickers on them, and those are the S4, the ones that have the silver saturated in it, the hand was absolutely blue-green, except in the middle of the palm, and there was a red spot. Now, everybody's going like, wow, look at that, it's blue-green, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going like, why is there a red spot? You know, because it didn't surprise me it was blue-green. What surprised me was that there was any kind of red at all. So we need to do a bunch more experimentation with the thermography, because that's the only way that we're actually seeing the attenuation of the signal, so they're no longer damaging to you. As far as her head, the entire ear into the, now there was still red in the brain, but Stephanie had pictures of the pictures, and she wasn't even sure, you know, exactly. Anyway, I haven't seen the entire thing, but it's so exciting, Jay, because what everybody has been seeing and everybody has been kind of knowing, now we've got proof of. I cannot imagine a mother or a father who is shown a picture of what this cell phone does to a adult brain, and the kid has got not as much skull thickness, so that it's even worse in children. I cannot imagine them continuing to give these kids unprotected access to all this Wi-Fi. And, you know, but anyway, right.
Let's just add some more to this, right?
Yeah.
Particles of mercury and aluminum, as you say, that also go through the brain-blood barrier. Mercury has been seen repelling. Have you seen that video? Repelling the ends of nerve endings. Literally, the nerve endings run away from it. Have you seen that, Nancy?
You've told me about it, but no, I have not.
All right. You can just type in to YouTube, you know, just go mercury nerve endings, and you'll see a video about what happens when mercury is placed in a medium with nerve endings. They literally shrink away from it. So now, add to that some microwaves to jiggle those nice little metal molecules. I mean, you've seen what happens if you microwave a CD, right? You ever microwaved a CD, Nancy?
No, but I know what happens to it. You'll never play it again.
If you ever go to YouTube and probably photonic induction and somebody who does this, videos about. Anyway, so what happens if you put a CD in a microwave? It turns to kind of looks like lightning all over the place, and it. Yeah, because you're basically microwaving metal, right? And they're inducing currents, and the currents are jumping from one part to the other, you know, because it's like file, you know, it's metal particles. Anyway, so imagine that's going on inside your brain as well. You know, there's sparks jumping from particle of metal from part to particle of metal. So all those bits of mercury and aluminium that we've been eating from, foil-wrapped freshness, you know, all that foil-wrapped freshness, that's directly in your brain blood flow. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I never thought about that. I see what you're trying to tell us.
Yeah.
Because it's metal in your brain. Now, if you put aluminum foil in your microwave and you turn on your microwave, the whole thing's going to explode. If you put low-level microwave from a cell phone into your head,
yes,
the aluminum and the mercury and the other heavy toxins that are in your brain could be discharging electronic bolts.
Have a little party.
Oh, my God. I never twigged on that before.
All right. Whoa. So essentially what you're doing is you're sticking the knife in the potato. If you ever put a knife in the potato when you're baking a potato, the knife gets hot and bakes the potato from the inside. So not only is the microwave beam from the cell phone cooking the outside of you from the outside in, it's also inducing small follower currents, small follower transmitters inside your brain that are microcurrents that are, and this is the thing, because they're nanoparticles. They work on extremely high frequencies. Sorry, go
ahead. That may be why we have the red in the brain after, even though we've got the shungite on it. Because even though I'm looking at it, I'm going like, this doesn't feel right to me. But if you've got metal particles in there that have been heated, regardless of the fact that the signal is no longer bothering your cells, okay, you're still heating up this metal, and that's what's causing the red look in the brain, is the metal
putting on heat.
And in the hand, in the middle of the hand, there could have been some buildup of some kind of thing in there.
Yeah.
Wow. I never thought of that connection to the metal in microwave.
Yeah. So, here's the thing. We need, as humans, because, you know, we can't really stop this stuff from going on, we need to be able to transform ourselves so that the environment is cleansed by our very being there. Wouldn't that be good?
Well, I think that's the creation of the new reality, is make yourself into the being that can create a reality that, you know, doesn't microwave your brain.
That's right. In fact, like organite, that we organize ourselves so that what organite does, all right, so organite has metal particles and crystals, and the metal particles attract energy, and the crystals pump it out again. So basically, we make our bones into crystalline form. The metal in our bodies, which we can't really help, so we use that to absorb energy with, and then we use our crystal parts to pump the energy back out again and radiate and be solar, like a little planet, maybe.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, we have to kind of look at what we're feeling and what we're sensing, because we don't have the meters. I mean, I think somebody's got meters to be able to determine this, but they're not letting us play with them, you know? And so the only way we can see any of it is to look at something like, you know, a picture of your heat signature. And that's only taking us that far. There's so many other things that we don't even, we can't even postulate about because we don't even have the imagination to figure out what it is. And that's what I find so beautiful about this time in existence, is that it's changing so fast. There's so much more information coming out that regardless of how, what you think you know nothing because there's so much more to know.
Because we've been lied to all of our lives, and these great Vatican libraries and all these great libraries, I saw this, you know, Himmler's secret library has been found. There, you know, there, and that comes back to this whole, the idea of collecting things being a reptilian ideal. You know, that was an interesting question, wasn't it?
No, I'm not sure. I didn't get, you know, something happened and I didn't quite get that.
Okay. Well, the idea was that, one of the questions was, is the tendency for people to collect things a reptilian trait? You see?
Why would somebody ask that?
That it's true.
It is true.
Simon said, yes, it's true. Reptilians like to have everything in order, so they collect things.
Are they hoarders?
Probably.
Should we look twice at the hoarders?
Yeah. Well, you know, stuff. People like their stuff. I like my stuff. We all have our stuff. But there, you know, there are people who do make these intense collections because it keeps their something in order. And, you know, people collect all sorts of weird stuff, things that you wouldn't consider valuable, but other people do.
Do you have the show American Pickers over there?
I don't do anything with television. Well, I watch two TV shows a week. One is, satire. Anyway, go on.
This is a great TV show because they go around to, basically hoarders and collectors and buy because they're hoarders and collectors and they sell to the public. So they take these trips all over the United States, and you're absolutely correct. The things that people collect are like, duh. One guy collected fans. Fans. Electrical fans. That was what his collection was.
Oh, what? Not Chinese fans?
No. This was, I mean, old American fans, you know, old fans. And he was into other electronics, but fans was his number one thing. You can't believe how many people have old cars, bicycles, every knickknack you can imagine. There's like one of the big things that they find out there are people that really like carnival stuff. I mean, yeah, you're right. There's all sorts of collections. And that was why I was like, what's he talking about collection? Is he, you know, is it, I don't know. I thought that was very interesting.
Isn't it? It's a very interesting idea that, well, as I said, he says it's not about trying to own everything. It's about making order, you know, creating an order. It's like wanting the whole set. Because that's the order of things, you know, it's like, that they're, because of the hierarchical mindset, they need to know their place and everything has to be in order. You know, you have to stand there where it's, you know, it's very militaristic.
Yeah, well, that makes sense that, you know, I mean, just military people, you know, they're trained to have everything in its place.
That's right. And what do you collect? Medals. It's the only thing military people are allowed to collect, isn't it? Everything else is just burned, trashed, moved on through. You only collect your medals.
I'm beginning to question myself. I have a huge mineral collection.
Well, we've all got a reptile, you know, we have a snake in the middle of our heads. We have a reptile spine. It's a reptile. It's a snake. Isn't it?
I'm human. You know, I mean, even if I've got genetics from all over, I'm human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the game that I'm playing. And, it would tickle me to no ends to finally, you know, see humanity step into its birthright. And I see it so close now. I mean, it's not going to take too much more before people are going, I think I see it.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? We've got all these, you know, Alex Collier says 22 different races that we're a part of. And there's something about 12 that's really important that has to do with the different strands that we're talking about, 12 strands. And they're connected, each strand is connected with a different off-world race. And therefore, by coming to terms and integrating that part of you that involves that off-world race, whether they're good guys or bad guys, is the aim of this whole operation. So, there is one strand that is a reptilian strand and we have to integrate it. There is one strand that is perhaps, Anunnaki and has all of the Anunnaki traits and it makes us do what Anunnaki people do. Do you understand? There's one strand that is mantid, one strand, you know, et cetera.
Well, the Anunnaki, for instance, okay? Anelia Benz, she was just sort of like clearing out her messages on her phone. And when she gives a client a session over the phone, it's recorded apparently on this device. And all of a sudden she's listening to something that she doesn't even recall ever saying, ever having the communication. But it was talking about the Anunnaki and how they had left DNA in the human being and therefore the DNA changes that the human being is going through because of the having Anunnaki DNA, it's connected with the Anunnaki on the Anunnaki home planet. And so as we change, as we evolve, as we get enlightened, it's actually affecting the people on the Anunnaki home planet. So she was discussing this whole, I think the recording, I think she played the recording is what it was. It was YouTube. She played it. And supposedly what's happening with the Anunnaki is that this is kind of like, I'm not sure if she was interpreting it or I just sort of got this, but that they had attempted to eradicate the DNA through the Great Flood. Flood the entire world, kill off everybody, clean up the DNA, we're good to go. But they didn't get everybody. There was that Moses guy and his bank of DNA. And so now it's
Noah.
Noah. I always say Moses, it's Noah.
I know. Noah.
Yeah.
Just get Noah. It right. I'm sorry. Just before people start, you know, leaping into it. Anyway, go on. Noah.
Thank you.
His DNA bank that he gathered in the ark.
Right. And that is why the Anunnaki are having problems on their own world, because they have the leadership, the royalty, and then the peons. And the peons are waking up as we wake up here. This is Anelia Benz. And like I say, she doesn't even remember saying it. It was a recording on her system.
So that's very interesting. So, from what I'm understanding is that each of these 12 strands represents a particular race, represents a particular star sign, energy, contact, frequency, chakra. There's 12s and there's all these different 12s. Frequency of the scale, you know, the chromatic scale, color, geometric form, etc. With there I've lost a train of thought. Where was I? All the 12s. That's right, the 12 races. So the idea of activating these strands is actually coming to terms with the judgments that we've made about these other races, because they're all inside us as well. So if you judge what's outside of you, you get judged by that which is outside of you. You see what I mean? That makes sense?
Well, yes, and you know, the people that, like, we call them the out-of-towners, you know, ETs that are trying to influence us from, but they're out of towners. We don't have any prejudice against them per se. It's just that we believe that we don't need to be mucked with. We need to be, have the space to evolve into what we can be. You know, we don't want anybody from the outside coming in and telling us what to do, because that's just what's been happening. This is, and that's why I think it's Simon also, that he talks about the great experiment. Isn't it Simon? Have you heard him use that word, that phrase?
I thought that was America.
See?
or humanity. Well, I mean, again, look, it's all a fractal. Whatever exactly. goes on down here, is going on out there, which is going on out there, and so on. So yeah, the great experiment. Look, we're all trying to get through this, and we're trying to integrate. And you know, let's bring it up to date, Nancy. We're in the midst of merging of timelines, and one of those timelines is where the Nazis won the war. That's one of the problems, and this is the problem of all the Mandela effect and all these weird things that people can't remember, and all of that. And this is the outpicturing of that intelligence, that artificial intelligence. Do you see what I'm saying?
Say it another way.
What, all right, so there are, from what I can understand, you know, from various people who've been talking about these things, that we're merging timelines, because there are evolutions of humanity that have evolved on different timelines, and some of them are caught up in those timelines, and they need to actually shift onto other timelines, but have no idea that you basically just change your vibration, you just change your attitude, and that's how you move on to one, from one timeline to another. You just retrain your habits.
Well, my analysis of a timeline is that for every decision you make, whether you go to the right or the left, you create a timeline, two of them. You went to the right, you went to the left. They both exist. They're simultaneously being projected down the, you know, the tunnel of existence. But when you take the right, you no longer put your energy into the left, and that timeline doesn't have the energy, and it just fizzles out. Now, the concept of reality is what we think it is, and majority rules, is that a given timeline becomes the dominant timeline when a lot of people agree to the rules of that given timeline. Now, one of the keys to this is, like you say, is the Mandela effect, which is when somebody you know died, which was Mandela, many of us remember him dying in prison, and then all of a sudden being alive again. Where I saw it very interestingly was regarding the 100th monkey. Because I had talked about the 100th monkey in my book, Cosmic Reality, and it somebody who had read the book, you know, before it was published, said, you better look at this particular website. And it was somebody, a woman who was young, who was putting together a very, very persuasive argument that the 100th monkey never occurred. Now, the 100th monkey is something that myself and everybody of my generation has absolutely no doubt existed. Now, what it was there was a British team and a Japanese team. They were looking at the same monkey, but they were on different islands 200 miles away. The British ate potatoes. They were washing the potatoes. There was a sweet potato, root potato there on the island that was for the monkeys ate. And after the 100th monkey washed a potato like the British did, everybody on the island began washing potatoes all in one. And they could trace the education. The first monkey taught the daughter, and the daughter taught the friend. And, you know, they could trace that. But the 100th monkey, boom, everybody was washing potatoes like that's the only thing they'd ever known to do. The weird thing was 200 miles away on an island where the Japanese were and eating rice, not washing potatoes. All of a sudden, all of the monkeys on that island at the same time began washing potatoes. It's been studied innumerable times. I read about it for years, decades, you know, them trying to figure out what's the root of this. And yet this woman was putting together a very persuasive argument it never existed. And that's when I realized, wow, they can even change events in a timeline. Events can be changed. And that was long before I saw the Mandela effect and the dying thing. But so sometimes when you go back and you think about a memory you have and you're talking to somebody else, they may not have that same memory because it was never on their timeline. The one that, you know. So now, back to 2012, they were crashing timelines. You remember this. They had two different versions of computer technology that could predict the tendency of the future based on certain input. So you'd say to the computer, if we invade Iran, what's going to happen? And then the scenario plays out. Well, when they got, every time they would get near 2012, the scenarios all ended up being the same. No matter what they did, they all ended up being the same. And it was either this dramatic, you know, end times kind of thing where, you know, the population is depleted and, you know, all this awfulness. And this other one where there's just sort of like, boom, you change frequencies, you become a fourth dimensional being, you know, and it was only two timelines. Then when we went through 2012, I detected every single conceivable timeline available again. And in 2012, in the spring, through the you know, the beginning of the year, everybody was doing everything. I've got a new job happening. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And it didn't take but about 4 months before all of that noise stopped. And we were back to two timelines. The goody two-shoes that I call it, and the one that's the nasty one. Now, the difference is that humanity has gotten to an evolutionary point where they're creating a third option. And that's the game that we're in. We don't have to go that way, and we don't have to go that way. We can create our own timeline. And all we have to do is convince enough people to go along with us, and boom, new reality. Top of the hour, Jay.
That's right. So, at the top of the hour... I played that before, didn't I? All right, okay. Let me just grab a suitable tuny-poo, maybe one of my own. Well, have I done anything this week? I'm just seeing if there's any tunes I made this week. No, nothing really. Oh, okay. How about, not that one. I've played that so many times. I've played that one to death. I was going to say Enyes with Aldebaran, but, let's see. Let's have this one. I like this one. Beautiful. David Young, Perfection. Sorry about that. I didn't realize the player had not come back. so I was just, we were just, listening to this, this recording of the cat arriving. So I'm just going to play it again for everybody's benefit. This is the sound when Kitty got let out of the cat box. Listen to this.
Oh, wow. Oh my God. Maybe we shouldn't have done it in the kitchen.
So there we go.
that needs to be up on YouTube.
It's on my Facebook page.
How did you happen to have the recorder on?
I thought I'd record it for posterity. Here comes it was just my smartphone, and I really couldn't track her at all. She was just a smear on the film. You see like one tiny thing of her running across the kitchen under the table. But she ran up the door along the wall, 6 feet up in the air, running along the wall. It was super feline. You know,
she didn't get hurt or anything. It was just a
little. Oh no, but she was like, she was responding to a lot of adrenaline. And she just let it all out in one go.
Well, it's like they can fly. I swear, I've seen them go that nuts, and it's like they can fly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so the sound of all the crashing is I've got lots of jars, of nuts and, you know, rice and all sorts of things all along this shelf in my kitchen. And she went along that shelf just like somebody in a supermarket who's knocking the cans off. Just like down the middle of the shelf, and everything was just flying off the shelves. But I tell you one thing, the only jars that broke were the empty ones. The ones that had any nuts in them, they just kind of bounced. It was very interesting.
That is. But I'm so glad you kept your sense of humor.
It was so surreal. It was so bizarre to see this thing. And eventually she stops because she finds a place where she considers herself safe, which is on the top of the cupboard. But I'll probably upload it to YouTube, and put it in my thing. But it was just an insane moment and very dramatic. And, she hasn't come out of hiding since, really, to be honest.
She will. Give her time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, she's a war veteran, you know, for some reason even before she was born spooked her really badly, and she's really timid and really, what's the word? I don't know what the word, you know, zippy.
Spooky, like a cat.
She gets spooked so easily. So easily, yeah.
Brady cat.
Yeah.
Scaredy
cat. Oh, yeah. Brady cat. Yeah, so I've got scaredy cats and chickens.
Well, did you hear the
JP's
chicken?
Home for the fearful.
Did you hear the chicken story with Shungite?
Oh, tell me the Shungite chicken story.
You're gonna like this. This is from Debrielle.
All right.
Okay.
Hello, Debrielle. How are you? I hope you're out there.
And she's got,
She's surrounded by men. You know, she's a real, sex goddess, you know, not a sex goddess, a love goddess. It's like people come to her and they all fall in love with her. It's great.
Well, so, she comes on every, the first Saturday of every month. She's on, with us on Say What.
She's going to go purple when she hears this.
Yeah. She's, as a matter of fact, this, last time she was on, the first Saturday of June, we got talking about Bigfoot. And so, that led us to the Inner Earth people. So this coming show, which was not this week, but the, you know, the first week in July, Saturday in July, we're going to talk about the Inner Earth, which is one of the reasons I was kind of pumping you. What does Jay know that he can tell me, you know? But anyway, the chicken story. I'd sent her some Shungite, and I think she bought the Shungite from us. And she has 15 chickens, and her oldest chicken was, you know, getting old aged and deferming, and she felt that the poor chick didn't have too much longer to go.
But nearly she soup time.
Yeah. Decided to try giving her some Shungite water. And she said that she drank a little of it, and then through the day she drank a little more of it, and then that night she began to take a little food in. Long story short, 3 weeks later the chicken's running around like she's, you know, fine. It's a true story.
True chicken stories from Wolf Spirit Radio.
So put those chickens of yours on some Shungite.
Yeah. Well, I think I embedded some into their coop, and there's one of the girls just won't move out of the box where the Shungite is. So I don't know whether it's the Shungite or she's just broody. She's the most broody creature. I call her Peckity, because like you try and pick her up and she pecks the bugger out of your hands, you know. She pecks like she means it. You know, it's not like, just get away. She's like, really, get to heck. You know, she's really quite, mean about the whole thing. Anyway, so, yes, the chickens and the Shungite.
We're not getting anybody calling in here? Come on.
No, do you know why?
Why?
Well, they didn't hear me say, I did the whole announce about the whole thing, and all they heard was, silence.
Tell them again.
Listen to the sound of silence. So, everybody, yes, if you want to call us, you can call us on 1-775-773-3431. Or if you're in the European zone, if you're in Europa, yeah, let's start calling it just according to 1984. If you're in Europa or what is it, Strip 51 or something, Airstrip 1. That's right, Airstrip 1. You can call us on 0141-356-4141. If you're interplanetary, intergalactic, you can call us on Skype. You just call us on Wolf Spirit Radio, and it'll get routed through to here, I think. And yes, indeed. And if you're a chicken, then here's a message for you. So, there we go. Nancy.
It seems like a lot of people are really into chickens.
Chickens are very interesting. You know, I've watched them, you know, because it's good fun too. And they're reptiles. You know, they behave like reptiles and they have this whole hierarchical society and stuff like that. And they resentfully respect each other. You know, they're like these godfather family members. But I had a kind of chicken conversation a couple of months back with one of them. The one I was talking about, the mean one. And I was like mentally like griping about, oh, you're bugger. She's like mean little thing. And I got this vibe back from her. I was like, you know, don't treat me with so much disrespect. In my world, in our domain, I'm regarded as royalty. I am the source of the great mysterious egg. I lay these mysterious eggs. I am a queen. That's what she said to me. And I thought, all right, okay. Well, I get you. So
They are mysterious because there's no way possible that a chicken can create enough calcium to create an eggshell.
Exactly. Where does all the calcium come from in these creatures like cows and sheep? Cows and sheep and milk and goats. They eat their stuff. They eat their grass. And some say, oh, well, the calcium comes in through all the dirt. But, you know, I just saw a thing. The eggshell is mostly calcium. Where does all that bloody calcium come from? I don't know. Not from the barley that I give them.
No, they did a whole study on that. And there's no way that they could possibly ingest in any shape or form enough calcium to create the eggs. The fact that they don't ingest any calcium for all practical purposes means it's even that much more of a mystery. So it's like the old, you know, question of what came first, the chicken or the egg. Okay. Now my contention is it was the chicken that came first because you have a thought, and a thought says, I need to eat something. I need a chicken. The chicken appears. To get that chicken into 3D reality, you have to have a story. The story is, oh, it came from a egg, and chickens lay eggs, and that's why I get the chicken. But somebody screwed up. Nobody added the story of, where did the eggshell come from? It's, you know, so you might get to the end of, finally figured out which came first, the chicken or the egg.
All right, so here's my answer to it. All right, you say chicken. I say it's not necessarily a chicken that lays an egg that subsequently hatches into the chicken. Because snakes lay eggs, don't they? And I'm coming back to the whole reptilian thing, is that if you look on the leg of a chicken, you'll see a reptile skin.
Well, you know about that Russian experiment where they took, now let me see if I can get this
Victor
correct.
Victor Gerov, yeah.
The duck and the chicken?
The duck and the chicken and the whole beam. Yeah, exactly. And so, the chuck, or the dickin. I don't know.
We better just explain this. What happened was that they took the DNA of, I believe, a duck, and they had a chicken egg. And they passed a laser beam through, this is the way I'm remembering it, I hope I'm right, that they passed a laser beam through the DNA structure, therefore taking it, like an image of the DNA, and then put that image into the embryo of the chicken egg, and the chicken turned into a duck. That's the story. Is that the way you remember it? Is that what you're talking about?
Something like that. The one of them is to do with, yes, there were, it was to do with microwaves. He would somehow bombard one group with microwaves and they would emit this material, this vapor which when you played this vapor on the duck eggs, they became chicken eggs, or they became kind of blended, and they were like half chicken, half duck things. But then there's another another experiment, which is the frog salamander experiment, which is what you're talking about with the laser. So he takes a laser beam. He shines a laser beam through a salamander's egg onto a frog egg, and the frog egg turns into a salamander.
That's what it was.
That's what it was.
Yep.
So now, I'll tell you, the frequency of that laser beam will be something like 415 nanometers. And that's the cell communication carrier wave. And
how do you know this?
This is again, Ashley Wilcock pulled this one out. But it's again research that the, well, they discovered how cancer forms is that the, all right. So, right. You know, it's just picture. You've got these nano coil things that we call DNA, and, they're like a kind of, low emission tungsten light bulb tube that is letting off the light that, is emitted by these cells. And that's in the ultraviolet band. Yeah. Cause it's tiny. It's nano, right? So, this is how these, cells, I mean, they communicate with each other with sound and light. Cells, you know, people are doing cell research all the time, and you see this, these little headlines, cells, you know, connected to each other, you know, discovered to talk to each other, and they find that it's on a ultraviolet frequency. And, the trick is that all these toxins, they cause the frequency to be distorted, and it may be, for instance, a metal or a semiconductor might rectify it. So when you rectify a frequency, you get double and half, and it may halve the frequency, down to a green rather than the ultraviolet. And, that's what appears to be going on within cells, within cancer cells, that they're not causing each other to reproduce properly because that reproducing signal is being blocked. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's distorting the environment in which the cells grow. And as you know, was it epigenetics? Well, the cell grows where it should grow because of the, cell grows into the cell that it is because of what it is surrounded by. Is that right?
I don't know I don't know the answer to that question, but it makes sense. Well, I mean, it's all environmental. Anything is environmental.
Yeah.
Why is it that within a breast, you know, which is basically the same kind of cellular makeup, that all of a sudden some point starts to go haywire? You know, I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that you got a little mercury that sort of pooled there.
Yeah. And it's very likely that that has some factor in changing the frequency.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, mercury has a different frequency to, all of these things. Yeah. Anyway, so that may be an example of why tumors are caused, you know, because why cells reproduce badly is because of the communication is disrupted by other materials that we call carcinogenic. That's what carcinogenic means.
Yeah, like, you know, EM Wi-Fi waves.
Yeah.
Because the concept of anything in life, I mean, it's movement, it's rotation.
Yeah.
And if you start screwing up with the rotation, and you can do that with, just putting, because it's all electromagnetic, and people don't, they focus on the electrical concept, but they're not focusing on the magnetic concept.
Yeah, and that's emotions.
Say again?
Emotions. Thoughts are electric. Emotions are magnetic. Emotions are sluggish and slow-moving and fluid, whereas thoughts are more swift, moving like spirit. like a wind.
That sounds very right. But in the 3D body, a cell, okay, if there's a change in the magnetic environment for that cell, from the small to the big, the spacecraft, when they initially put them into long duration spaceflight, especially the cosmonauts, the Russians, they were coming back crazy. And they finally determined that the reason that they were coming back crazy is the bioelectromagnetic field of the space capsule was not the same as on Earth. So now all of these man-occupied spacecraft have a Schumann resonance. It creates the same bioelectromagnetic energy that is naturally created by Earth. So if you have people's brains going nuts, because they're not in the bioelectromagnetic field of which is natural for them, that would make a lot of sense that at the cellular level, if you change the bioelectromagnetic field, either through changes in electricity, but also the magnetism, then you're going to have a cell that is deformed. It can't operate correctly. It malfunctions. It creates, odd duplicates of itself.
There's another factor. And this is something that I spoke with Frank about, Frank Jordan, because he's worked with cancer patients for years and years and years, and he said that there's one thing in common that all people who have had cancer have, and that that if that can be changed, then the cancer goes away. I heard that, I asked some other people who I knew personally who have what they say battled with cancer and come back, and others who didn't. And do you want to know what the factor is, Nancy?
Yes, I thought maybe I'd missed it.
No, I haven't said it yet. The factor that gave them cancer, and you can trace it back to, for every person, that there is a moment. And the moment is that they decide they want to die. 100%. Even probably tiny children. Because, I think people don't get that even as a baby, you think exactly the same thing, same way as you do today.
Yeah, it's something critical that people miss.
Hmm.
There was a German study done that showed within 18 months, cancer victims, if they, did this survey of the cancer victims, within 18 months prior to them getting cancer, they would have some very traumatic event that normally involved the loss of somebody, their husband, their child. And so that would make sense that, you want to join them, so you want to die. And that would answer that correlation. Much beyond stress.
So and then what happens is that decision puts out a core signal that goes out all along your body, because there's a moment that says, shut down everybody, and it's time for the cleanup crew. And who are the cleanup crew? But the molds. The funguses, and our old friend, the moon. Our old friend Candida, the Nung, the being under your skin, that I've been going on about for years and years and years. Not for years and years and years, about a year and a bit now.
Feels like years and years and years.
I know, I've been droning on and on and on and on. www.thenung.co.com. No, thenung.com. It's all about Candida and, what it seems to be and what it, it seems to be a lot of diseases.
This is your website?
Yes, I made the website up and,
it's the Nung?
thenung.com. Because Nung.
Somebody had
Nung.com, yeah. It's a Korean name or something,
Oh my.
Yeah.
Oh my.
So, So yeah, so there's this link, and so yes, it's all the whole cancer, acid, pH, alkaline balance situation is it can be. I use borax for you know, and it's actually had an effect on my weight because a lot of this stuff is about weight. You know, apparently obesity is not about being fat. It's about being inundated with this parasite.
Well,
I've spoken ad nauseum about this.
I know, but yeah. let's do it one more time, okay? Mm-hmm. Because there's people out there that may not have gotten it the first time or just, you know, need to really hear this again, and me included, okay?
Yeah.
Because You when you were talking about the Nung, it was like, yeah, okay, I'm not giving up my pizza, I'm not giving up my beer. But then you brought in the concept of a solution to the situation, which is bring in Baraxo that's going to do a whole bunch of stuff, but it's also going to take away the urge, the appetite for those type of things.
Yes.
So, okay, can you give people kind of a better understanding of how this Baraxo would work in this equation?
All right, so let me just go back a bit and talk about what happened when I was kind of investigating it. We've been talking about, you know, I'd heard about Candida for several years. My ex-wife was a nutrition expert, and she was also working with people with ME, and it seems to have some connection with people with ME or chronic fatigue syndrome and all these things, and various other syndromes all seem to be pointing to the same thing. So I kind of, you know, chewed on it, as it were, in my mind, and with input from Frank, and he was talking about various things in cancer, and you know, part of what Frank was talking about was that, you know, actually communicating with a disease. If you got a disease, like, you know, I had a cold, you know, I had a virus, and I sort of thought, right, well, let's address the virus and talk to the virus collective in my body, and I found that I could, and I asked it questions, and it gave me answers. I thought, oh, all right, I see. And so whenever I've got a situation now, whenever I feel ill, I actually talk to it. And the ill goes away if you talk to it, strangely enough, because that's what it's doing. It's trying to draw your attention. It's trying to say, hello, I've got an input here. So anyway, when I contacted the craving, I was looking at the craving of sugar, and I thought, what if I was not actually feeling my own feeling, but I was kind of somehow feeling the feeling of this yeast in my body that collectively was sending out a great big wave of thought form that said, see that donut over there? Isn't it delicious? Can't you feel your mouth watering when you're thinking about the donut? You're thinking about the sugar in your mouth.
Please stop.
So I'm suddenly addressing everybody's Nung, right? Everybody's got it. And
I've been craving donuts for the last week. I don't know what it is.
The inner Homer.
Years.
All right. So, well, you know, have you had beer recently? Have you eaten something that had a lot of yeast in it?
No.
Uh-huh. Have you had sugar recently?
I have sugar, yes.
Because
I have to get up for these shows. So, but it's pure glucose, and I know it's so bad, but.
Well, the reason, I'll tell you why it's so bad. All right. What happens, Nancy, when you make bread and you add the water, the yeast, and the sugar together?
It's alcohol, right?
Yeah, but what does it do?
In my body?
No. When you're making bread, you mix the yeast with the sugar and the water. What does it do?
It rises.
Yeah, bubbles up.
Bubbles up, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's why you get bloated. Makes you feel full.
Almost. Oh.
Yeah, because that's what's happening.
because, you know, one of the things I have about, you know, I like fruits and vegetables well enough. Mm-hmm. And I got into eating fruits and vegetables at work, you know, when I had a real job there. And what amazed me was that I started to eat the fruit because the guy that worked with me, we just sort of started doing this, right? But we were also ordering, you know, Wendy's hamburger and french fries every lunch. We just were adding this stuff. And pretty soon I didn't want the french fries. And pretty soon after that I didn't want the hamburger. But what I really kind of missed was that feeling of being something substantial there. My body was telling me, I don't want that. I want this other stuff. But the only drawback was I felt like I didn't get fed. I felt energetic. Everything else was running right. But I think we get seduced by that feeling of fullness in some real emotional way.
Yes. So here's the thing. I spoke to the Nung. I spoke to the semi-parasitic being that is inside my body. As I had spoken before to the virus, you know. So I spoke to the Nung and I said, by the way, I'm calling you Nung because that's what you make me want to do. You make me want to go Nung, 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 Nung with bread. Bread and donuts and sugar. Nung. And it's kind of aggressive, you know. It pushes you to do things like, anyhow. So I spoke to it and I kind of psychically groped it, you know, palpated it. You know, what shape is this? What feeling is this? What is its feeling? And I thought, it's got a consciousness, but the consciousness is very low. And the consciousness is this. It's lonely and it's hungry. And so if it's lonely, it wants friends. And what its friends are is more yeast. So it sets up a resonance in your body that tries to get it to eat more yeast. Therefore, donuts, beer. Okay. That's why it acts like Homer. Homer acts like a Nung. He is the Nung, you know, embodied. And, the other thing that it has is, it's lonely, so it tries to make you eat more of itself, and it's hungry. And, hungry, basically, it's fed by sugar. So anything that can readily change to sugar, the better. So, Nancy.
Well, what does Boraxo have to do with the whole equation?
All right, Borax is a fungicide.
It's a what?
A fungicide.
It's a fungicide?
Yeah. If you want to get rid of fungus and mold, you make a solution of borax and you spray it. Okay? So borax kills... If you've got smelly feet, it's because there's candida in your body and it's coming out of your feet. So if you want to deal with smelly feet, then have a borax foot bath. But the best thing is to use borax from the inside out, and it's no more toxic than salt, but it tastes like crap. So I drink it down. I put a dab on my finger. I wet my finger. I dab it in the jar. I then put that dab of powder on my tongue and then drink it down with some tea or coffee. And that's my borax of the day. And you see, borax contains boron. So as well as being alkaline, right, so it's nullifying all the acid of all this mold produces acid, right? That's, you know, it's acid smell. All the smelly things are very acidic. And mold is particularly, that the Ming, that moldy Ming, you know, that purple, when the mold is purple and it's got that really kind of, oh my God, when you walk in the room, you know, something's gone purple. Yeah, that's very acid. Anyway, so borax, being very alkaline, neutralizes that, and essentially kills the fungus as well. The fungus runs away from borax like nerve cells run away from mercury. So,
Do you remember hearing about, and it was quite a few years ago, maybe 10, this doctor from Europa, who was coming out with the concept that cancer is really a big fungus. Do you remember that?
I've been following this kind of thread for years. Somebody posted a thing from Nexus magazine called The Borax Conspiracy. I've also got a link for that on thenung.com. But yes, lots of doctors are getting this, and funnily enough, they always seem to die in mysterious circumstances, like they commit suicide with 9 nail gun hits to the head.
Well, this guy was actually curing cancer with baking soda.
Yeah, baking soda, borax. But I tell you, the reason that borax is good and superior to baking soda is that it also contains boron. And the problem with the Nung is that in building its own body, it takes our body from us. And it eats the calcium in our body. So if you haven't got boron in your diet, it won't bind back with your bones when you do eat the calcium. So that's what you do. You need to have boron supplements, and this is, again, this is deliberately leached from our soil. The boron is taken out of our soil because it makes us ill. It weakens our immune system. So borax is really good on lots of levels.
Now wait a minute, you just said that boron is taken out of our soil?
Yeah. It's one of those trace elements. You know, they say, oh, well, our soil isn't what it used to be with the organic diet and all that stuff and all the chemical fertilizers and hormones and all this business. Yeah, boron is the thing that is taken out. You know, it's one of the things. Lots of things are taken out and lots of crap is put in.
Okay, so they take the boron out that's naturally occurring in soil.
Yeah.
And they take that out of the soil so it doesn't get into the plants. Therefore, we do not ingest it.
Yeah.
So if you take borax, boron is in there, yeah. And you will be supplementing yourself how?
Well, you will then be able to rebuild your bone structure.
So the bones need the boron in order to take the calcium
and magnesium, yes.
Magnesium. So it's like the cement for the calcium and the magnesium.
Yeah. And
is this all on that website, Jay?
This is all on thenung.com, yeah. And you know, it's, if anybody wants to contribute to it, I'm very, very happy to bring people into it and to make it a conversation. Yeah. None of my websites are about me saying stuff. It's really a ball about building little cafes for people to hang out in. Really, that's really what I'd like to do. Isn't that, you know, I'm not really interested in blah, 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 blah. Even though it sounds like it. But, you know, if I have to have a show, I have to think, I think of something that I'm interested in, like pyramids. You know, I could talk about pyramids for several hours, which is why I always talk about pyramids, which is where we started in the first place. Meanwhile, back at the stately P Manor.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there's some things that just seem critical to the mix. And it's not just the pyramid, it's really sacred geometry. Now there's another thing about the sacred geometry and how inclusive it is to just everything. I've told this story before, but my brother gets a call from this friend of his that's a nurse. And she had been working on something and accidentally got into what do they call that when they talk back and forth? Not a blog, but chat room type of thing, you know. But there's something else.
Round table?
Not a round table. It's one of those forum. Okay. So they're having a forum, and the forum is talking about what is the forum talking about? What were we just talking about? My mind just went. Oh, okay. They were talking about. It was graduate students that were talking about a project that they were doing for the university setting that this nurses working in the medical part of the university setting, and she sort of got into an inner file that should never have been public. But she's looking at it, and because it accidentally had gotten posted as public, and she's reading it, and they're talking about the fact that they had been doing this experiment where they were taking, how is that happening now? They were working with the DNA, and there's like four different things in a DNA sequence, and they can be manipulated in any sort of way to be able to get, you know, the genes. They have a different name for them. I don't remember what they are. They have a letter form, but there's only four of them. But it makes, from mathematics, you can have a lot of variations of it. So what they were doing, best as I can understand the story, was that they were taking the DNA sequencing and they were taking language, and they were basically saying, if we sort of use this as a code to the language in a cryptography kind of concept, do we get anything different? And so they were playing, and of course they're working with computer program, so they're playing and they're doing all the languages of the world and putting it through as if the key to unlocking a secondary language is based on DNA. And then they came to ancient Hebrew, and when they plugged it in, they got back a statement that said, congratulations, you found the Messiah. Right? So she calls my brother and tells him about this, gives him the URL, and by the time he got there, it had been taken down. But I found that absolutely fascinating because there was the Medina Foundation Institute, and it was working with the actual construct of the images of letters in the various languages, and every language would have a sacred geometry based on the structure of the letters themselves. And that when they put it through a system where they had like a beam of light coming at it and it would cast a shadow, you'd see geometry, you know, the sacred geometry come up. Jeez, that was an old, I mean, at least 30 years ago.
This is something to do with the tetrahedral form, isn't it?
Yes, it's all
yeah.
Very
you involved. Shine, yeah, I remember hearing about this. Now, if I can, I've not seen it. Maybe somebody, if anybody in the chat room can find this on YouTube, I'm sure somebody's done it. And I think it's something called the letters of fire, is that if you shine a beam of light through a tetrahedron at different angles, you get all the different letters of the Hebrew alphabet in turn. Either it's the tetrahedron or the star tetrahedron, the Merkaba form. But they form all the characters.
It's not just the one. They can virtually do it for almost every language.
And is every language based on a different geometric form?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So the form is connected with the frequency,
uh-huh.
And the frequency is connected with the race. Yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Language is not something that just developed, you know, out of
accent
air.
Is so interesting.
It comes very well. That's the other thing about the DNA, you know, is that the
DNA's got an accent.
Maybe because the DNA, what the Russians have see over, you know, in the West, they talk about the 10% of DNA that is, they have some reason for it being, and that 90% of it is what they call junk. And the Russians said that doesn't make any sense. So they've been studying the 90%, and they discovered that the DNA is actually a biological internet. It's the way that everything works. It's the way everything communicates. And there's indications that, you know, DNA is like the, it doesn't just end at the human body or a body, you know, even an animal's body. That it's like the web of the universe, that frequency of the DNA is actually a massive, super biological internet that connects us all. You know, the web of life, you know, the concept of a spider web, and that something happens, well, something happens here. it's, and this is Russian science that they're looking at this. That it just isn't limited.
You're looking for the word quantum entanglement.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. But it's at the DNA level.
That's right. So down at that level, we are communicating in ultraviolet light.
Probably, yes.
Because DNA, that's, you know.
On the third dimension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the other dimensions are going to have a frequency that is, again, environmentally changed slightly because of the higher dimensions, like octaves.
Yeah, it is an octave. So ultraviolet in our dimension will be probably a shade of red, perhaps, or maybe another shade of green. Maybe it's ultra green. Maybe it's another shade of blue. Whatever healthy might look like. Maybe it's pink. It's probably pink when, you know, come to think about it. It's a sort of magenta color. A higher frequency of red. And, that's how we communicate with each other as well on the lower frequency. Think about this. Our face can be, flushed and drained quite quickly. What if those are subconscious signals that we pick up from each other, but you have no idea that we're actually flashing red all the time, but really on a slow kind of carrier wave? Think about that. And also consider that for some strange reason, women can see these different shades of red much more readily than men do.
I saw a program where they took and they had people looking at pictures of other people who were in different states of emotion, from anger to happiness, joy, you know, all these different ones. And they would indicate what they were perceiving to be the emotion being, you know, that they could understand from the imaging. And then they took people who had Botox. And the Botox in their faces wouldn't allow them to move much. I mean, Botox, you know, it might get rid of the wrinkles, but you also lose a tremendous amount of movement in your face. So the people that were without the Botox, what they were discovering, taking, you know, filming all this, is that when somebody saw somebody who was, you know, laughing, the person would begin to do a laugh look on their face. If it was joy, it was joy. Surprise, it was surprise. Their faces were actually reflecting what they were seeing. But the people with Botox couldn't do that. And they were incredibly wrong about what they thought they were seeing. Because they could not respond in an energetic way that said, oh, I'm seeing this as causing my face to go into a smile. That person must be smiling. And they did, they had this one guy who, from life, he hadn't been able to, perceive the differences in facial expression. It was just this weird thing. He just never he never saw it. He didn't even know he was missing it, but he was socially not really in the right place. And they were doing some, I think that they thought that he had some Asperger's in him. But he was in a study, and during this study, they were pinging certain places in the brain with a charge. I'm not sure what charge it was, magnetic or electric. But they were, you know, boom, boom, boom. And then they would have people say, you know, what are you feeling? So that they could understand kind of mapping out the brain. Well, after he got a dose of this in this one part of his brain, on the way home, he got all freaked out because he was seeing all these people with animated faces. So he very excitedly calls the doctors, and they were like, well, that's really interesting, and because he didn't really know that he wasn't seeing it. And so they're like, oh, okay, all right, well, it's probably going to go away. It never went away. And this man was now suddenly able to correctly interact socially because he could see the faces. So don't use Botox if you want to really be part of life. Because there's something energetically that happens when You see something, you perceive it, you make the imaging on your face, and your body picks it up. It's not just a visual imprint.
I mean, what kind of good idea is it to to inject what normally kills people into your skin? You know, what could go wrong, number 237?
I don't know.
Anyhow, so we're coming up to the top of the second hour. That was quick. It's been a big day. So very interesting. Thank you very much, Nancy. We've had some.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Interesting follow-ups to the Simon Parks program. So as we move into hour 8 and 9, I'm going to play a bit of music because I need to download the next show, which was recorded yesterday. Frank's not very well, so we're going to be playing a replay. So thank you very much, Nancy Hopkins, for accompanying me in this little journey to the unknown and back again, home in time for tea.
Appreciate it, and good luck with the kitten.
Yes, I'm sure.
Thank you, audience.
Good night, everybody. Where's my show? Oh dear.
And don't forget to donate.
Oh yeah, you can donate, but even better than donating is come along to the archives and just buy a month's archive and see what you can download. There's so much there, so many people's names that you'll recognize now that were not so big then and big now, and we spoke to them all. So where's me? There we go. Here we go. Ever Beyond. It's been JP. That's been me. Good night.
Good night.